In the short time that you have been there, what are your short-term goals and what are your long-term goals for this period while you're there?
The long-term goals are the goals of government. They're articulated in what's called the National Development Plan and the priorities of the sixth administration.
Mm-hmm.
And you know those priorities, but just to remind you, just building a capable and ethical and developmental state, economic transformation and job creation, education, skills and health, consolidating the social wage through reliable and quality basic services, spatial space integration,
mm-hmm.
human settlements and local government, social cohesion and safe communities, as well as a better world and a better Africa. So that those are the seven priorities for the sixth administration.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd know that they then get translated into 5-year mm-hmm. and 1-year plans.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1-year plans would also be informed by what the president says
mm.
when he addresses the nation.
Mm.
The four priorities for this year, for 2021, you'd recall it was defeating COVID, sorting out the accelerating economic recovery, implementing economic reforms, so the structural reforms to create sustainable economic growth in the country, and finally fighting corruption and building a capable state. So that's the long-term plan. The team has put together plans because there's a planning cycle and, you know, there's never discontinuity. So those plans are there. I'm familiarizing myself with those plans to make sure that we implement. And my focus is making sure that the rest of government integrates and coordinates and coheres in delivering on the mandate that the political principles are going to deliver on. In the short term, the first 100 days, the overrated 100 days,
yes.
they can only be about orientation, isn't it?
Mm.
I need to understand the environment I'm walking into. I need to understand the expectations. I might think I know what I'm here to do, but I now need to square up the expectations to make sure that what I understand and what the expectations are coincides, adjust accordingly.
Mm.
In management, they call this phase the phase when you are consciously incompetent because it's a new environment, and nobody expects you to know everything about an environment you haven't been in. You would otherwise be pretending, and it wouldn't be true.
Mm.
So, I'm systematically working through the S-curve that would get me to conscious competent, and essentially just getting to meet the people that I'm going to be working with, meeting the key stakeholders,
mm.
you know, all the key stakeholders, all the key departments, all the people I work with, mm. organized labor, the big stakeholders of business, other NGOs, so internal stakeholders and external stakeholders. And I'm systematically going through that.
Mm.
But work has to continue. So I will step in and chair the specific things and, you know, do the things that the previous DG did or the position of the DG and the president has to fulfill.
Mm.
There are various interdepartmental or interministerial task teams where there are specific areas that need sharp coordination and focus and collaboration between departments. So there are various of those task teams. I'm going through that. This morning I was supposed to chair the Eskom one, but it got postponed.
Mm.
I have already attended the one on vaccines because the battle against COVID is a top priority,
right?
So I've already attended that one.
Mm.
And next week it's a big cycle of committees that one has got to the cabinet committees. So, you know, there are different parts of this role.
The president talks very tough on corruption, and we are in this period where all of us, again, we are marred by PPE scandals and all this other corruption. Is that one of the things that you'll be looking at as well, insofar as making sure that people account?
It is definitely an area of focus. It is an annual area of focus, and I think it's a big area of focus across the system. We will be looking at it. There are different role players in dealing with corruption. And we will just make sure that all of them act in concert and that we get the requisite action and impact of their actions. So often people say, you're not doing anything, President, about corruption.
Mm.
He has set up and resourced all the entities that participate in dealing with corruption. So when you deal with corruption, you've got four dimensions. It's the prevention, detection, investigations, and resolution. So under prevention, it's the measures that all management must put in place to make sure that they prevent corruption, including instituting things like whistleblower lines, an ability for people to report, a protected disclosure, to report corruption when they see it.
Mm.
Detection is when you're able to see that something has gone wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And there are various instruments, again, that we use to ensure that we detect corruption when it happens. When the PPE corruption happened, it was detected. And investigations were instituted because we were able to pick up that things were not going right.
Mm-hmm.
And then in investigation, that's where you would have the police. The PFMA gives you the tools to ensure that you are able to prevent, detect, investigate, and resolve a corruption. So under investigation, so you've got the police, you've got the Hawks, you've got the SIU, you've got NPA. A whole number of bodies. No. So those are investigators. Once they have investigated, they then transfer it to this fourth pillar, which is it resolution. So under resolution, it's prosecution, where you take people to court, or the disciplinary process, where you discipline people internally in an organization. And so the president has made sure that every component of dealing with corruption has the resources it requires. And people have been given the mandate to move. They have been enabled. Proclamations for the SIU have been signed where they are needed. The NPA has been given and matching orders, including targets for them to get to the people who are doing the wrong things.
Mm.
But managers, more importantly, managers, the directors general, that I will be working with and leading and will have the deep honor of doing that. I must deal with the front, what we call the frontline measures to prevent and detect corruption so that not too much goes this side to the investigation and you know, there's a phrase people like consequence management.
Okay.
The management must have all of the governance structures that they need to have.
Holding people accountable before it even gets to...
Before it even gets to...
Yes.
And it's stuff that we have been talking about in the Forum of South African Directors General, and it's a big area of focus in it.
I've read your CV, and you've studied, you've worked serving in different boards, and you've really worked hard to get to where you are right now. What would the DG say to people who say, but we've read that her husband, Uba France, is a confidant of the president, or that you guys are friends, or it's somebody that he trusts. So I'm just asking something that they would ask
that's
us.
Out there.
Yeah, so.
Shall I answer it with a question or with an analogy?
An analogy.
My father's name is Nzimande. Does it ring a bell?
Yeah.
My father's name is Nzimande. So, I've been called Blade's wife, Blade's daughter, Blade's cousin, Blade's niece. Where does it begin? Where does it end?
Mm.
When a man gets appointed, when France was appointed to the board of Petro SA, he didn't say anything about his wife. When a woman gets appointed, the husband gets dragged in.
Mm-hmm.
So, all I will say is that I have worked hard for where I am, to get where I did. My niece says, actually, Uncle Franz was lucky to get you for a while. That's now my feisty little niece who is 30 years old, who is a lecturer in UCT. So, yes, people will say that. That's their view.
But that's the patriarchal society that we're living in.
It's unfortunate.
Who's a Wuga who's the closest associate that's made it, and then it will be made to seem as if, oh, but yeah, it was easier for her.
It often arises when it's women who are appointed and not when it's men that are appointed. My sister-in-law got appointed CEO of Solidarity. She was called Blade's wife because she was in Zimanda. Now, and it's one of those blots against our democratic society that's meant to progress and move on, but it takes one step forward and ten steps
Does it irritate you?
Back. It does, of course. It does. Nobody wouldn't be. Not when you work as hard as I do. Not when you've worked as hard as I have done. You know, my children, when they were young, I used to call them the poor abused children because I was hardly there. I fortunately had healthy parents who retired early enough and who said, we are here, we will look after the children, go and succeed.
Wow.
You know, so
I love that you bring in that aspect about family.
Yes.
How do you balance? And I mean, that also talks to the balance, which you've got. It sounds like you've got a good support system that's supporting you if you are called to duty, or you've understood that I've been called to serve my country. So talk to me about family. When do you get time for your kids? How many kids do you have?
I now have three kids. I have one of my own, two from my husband. We got married 8 years ago, so... Yeah, I haven't been married for too long, for most time.
How did you meet him?
How did I meet him? In the sector. I was in the energy sector. You see that I had worked in electricity for most of my life. So I met him in the sector, possibly in one of the meetings. You know, as I say, I've always worked in energy.
Okay.
He's organized, NUM
in the workers.
In the space of energy. Mm. Mm. But you know, he lost his wife in 2006. So, So when I was much younger and there were the children,
How old are your children?
Now 30. My son is 31. My niece is 30. I brought them up together like siblings because my sister lives in Pretoria. So my parents decided that she's got one, I've got one, so let's put them together so that they can, you know, not be spoiled brats, both of them. So they're brought up together by myself and my parents. Big support system.
Just last question, because I know we're running out of time. COVID has impacted all of us in some way or another. Mm. For you, what are some of the lessons, whether it's professional or in your personal life, what has COVID taught you as we've paused as people, as employees, as mothers? What has it taught you?
Yeah. So COVID has been a pretty rough time for me because as Director General in the province, I needed to coordinate the Gauteng COVID response. So by the time you see the Premier there speaking, somebody's been sorting bullets behind them. So one didn't quite get the opportunity to pause like everybody else did, because if the health workers and the police and the teachers and the retail workers, but in terms of government, the health workers and the police were going to be out there working, the leaders couldn't command this battle from the bunkers. Mm-hmm. So we established a command center, and I woke up every morning, went into the command center, early hours till late night. Late nights, eventually we established a cadence, we all got a grip of the COVID, and we sort of repaced ourselves and all of that, but we were thoroughly shocked and scared when it started. And what I found is that a lot of people emotionally were affected, and I found a lot of people than usual, even in the work environment, calling just to have conversations, to just deal with their own anxieties and all of that. It didn't help that we had 6 outbreaks in the command center. And you know, if there's been an outbreak, then 14 days, people will have to go out for 14 days and all of that. Even the Premier got affected. And when he was out, you know, you then have to step in and hold it. You know, touch wood, I didn't get infected, not with the first wave, not with the second wave. But what I found was, I thought that at a personal level, I thought that COVID was calling on us to go deep within ourselves, because we had forgotten about ourselves and we were out there, whether it was work, whether it was church, whether it was family, whether it was friends. It was too many friends, too many commitments, too many, you know.
You were busy.
We were just busy, and it sounded like busy with business. But with COVID, it's been like, reconnect, look deep into yourself, deal with yourself, deal with your own issues. There's no church now to hide behind.
Or friends to escape your home situation.
If you are praying, you now learn to pray on your own. No reverend to lead prayer for you. You have to do it for yourself. You have to create your own relationship with whoever you regard as your almighty. I'm a Christian, so I pray God. And I found that it just gave me time to just go into myself and literally settle and go down and sit. But it also, I found it gave me lots of strength and energy. So the way I was running around with the COVID response, I coordinated the strategic work of the pandemic, but I went down into each of the work streams. Even in the work streams, I'd go down into the subs if they were not working properly, just to help people. Spoke to a lot of people privately with a lot of the stream leads, people who were leading specific components of the response. This is what's not happening. This is what we need to do. I have spoken to this. National says this. So you let the provincial respond, and there was a national component. So every Sunday we did the net joints, and then in the week we did the provincial, and the provincial has got municipalities. I needed to build relations with municipalities, so I visited municipalities. I had tons and tons of energy, and people at my farewell were asking, just share the secret.
Mm.
But the secret for me was the fact that I wasn't distracted with anything else. I was, COVID was the only thing I was doing.
Mm. Then were you disappointed when the corruption thing happened?
No,
were you
absolutely. Absolutely. Especially
considering the way you're talking about it.
Mm. No, it was. But again, we had our detection mechanisms up. So as far as the COVID response, the COVID corruption in Gauteng, by the time it went to the newspapers, we'd been investigating for 6 weeks because we picked it up. We then activated the full toolkit of dealing with this. The particular individual who was leading the wrong things, we set up a team around them. They didn't work with it. And when the other team members came and said, that thing is not going right, we then spoke to the relevant person to address them, to give them instructions to do right. Treasury did that. We then called in the SD. By the time the president issues the proclamation, they'd been investigating and holding for 6 weeks. So it was indeed, it hit deep. It hit deep because if indeed a health worker who, for starters, is patient facing, gets infected because they didn't have PPE or they had PPE of poor quality, that's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Who should do that? Why should anybody?
Well, those people that risk their lives on a daily basis.
And why do they risk their lives? Because they're special people who choose to go where everybody's running away from. And then the next thing, when you're supposed to support them, you go do something.
Shortchange
like
them.
So it did hit me personally, and that's the part of me. All everybody thinks I'm soft and tiny and a woman and all of that, but these teeth bite. That's when the teeth bit, and people realized that they can bite.
Wow.
That's where the fists went out, and people were knocked out.
Wow.
It was a tough thing to do. It needed to be done. I was spurred on by the fact that there are those 70,000 workers who go out every day in hospitals to treat people who are infected, and somebody was about to support.
Like, how dare you
seize an opportunity? You know, so it felt like a big
Baxter,
the last time I got this angry was when, you know, in the 80s in the struggle, and people would betray others and people would be killed. That's
their level.
That's the end of the emotion. But we will deal with these people one by one, step by step, and they will have to bear the consequences.
And then, so what do you do to, like, unwind and relax in all this business? Do you have friends?
Well,
how are your relations? I mean, it gets
friends.
Your work, it sounds like
it's always taken a priority with everybody. As a result, friends, I suppose life places you in a situation that you will cope with what your demands are, what the demands on you are. So the few friends I have understand that our friendship is a plastic one. It works over Apple. We phone each other with my friends. We even forget we haven't seen each other for years. Mm. But even then, it's not too many because, I have never been one of too many friends. Amanda, someday when when I write my book, hopefully you'll get to understand. But I grew out of cohort, and I tended to be isolated. So I learned to live within me and with myself. And
be so happy with your own company.
I'm happy with my own company because I could never fit. I was too young in every environment.
You matriculated 16, right?
Yeah, and two whatever. You know, there were always descriptions.
Sticking out.
Too many adjectives to describe them, so I just decided, you know, I'm enough. So my best friends are books. I read.
What are you reading right now?
I'm a voracious reader. There's just nothing that doesn't get read by me. I'm reading two things, and often I do that. A lot of the times I do developmental books. So I've just finished a book based on Harvard Business Review articles dealing with difficult people, but it was a small little book.
How do you deal with difficult people?
I'm reading Matsukato, The Entrepreneur, The Entrepreneurial States, and I'm also reading a book edited by Professor Daniel Plakis, who's just passed on, bless his heart, about protecting the inheritance, which is the new democracy of South Africa, building state capacity. Mm. So it's a collection of articles by various people, including the first director general, no, not the first, the second director general of the Republic, Frank Chikane. He has written a piece in there, so did Joel Nachitenza, head of policy at the time. So, and a whole lot of other academics who have been contributing to building state capacity in South Africa. How do you deal with difficult people?
Yeah. Especially in like it's a male-dominated... It's like, as women, we have to do extra all the time.
Yes.
Why can't... when I speak, you do.
Yeah.
When you speak, I do. Yeah. God, that's in that we must do.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you deal with it?
In life, you carry a toolkit, you know. So the sports that most typifies that is golf, and I don't play golf, but I hear in golf you've got different sticks to use depending on where the ball is or depending on the shot you want to achieve. So I also know of the management toolkit. So there are a number of things in your toolkit. The basic entry point is to assume that people are good, people are logical, and people will do what's supposed to be done. And so that when somebody doesn't do that, it then calls for attention. I don't assume that people are difficult and all of that. And once you've figured out, often you then sit with people. You start out by giving them instructions and talking normally to them, and when they don't achieve, you understand. You try and understand what's the reason. Why can't you do that which you're asked to do? Position helps a little bit, but some people can sort of go underground and white end you. So I often try and appeal to the inner pride of an individual, the fact that nobody in life is on this planet not to do anything good.
Wow.
A lot of people have a sense of pride that's so deep that if you say to them, but this work represents you, is this how you want me to see you? I've often found that people would change. Even the most difficult people would want to show you, I'm educated and I actually passed with distinctions. Oh, you're deep. Show me what wants distinctions. So, and that's what I do. I try and deal with people as individuals. I don't deal with people as groups or numbers. I always will go to know people's names. Zakane will soon understand this. I will know people's names where it's possible, know people's families. I was brought up in a very humble home. So the first people I connect with in any environment I go to are the people who make tea and the security and those people. Staff, I will cut across. You know, you have a branch head, and then they have staff. I'll get to know staff behind, the formal leaders of units. And of course, as a last resort, you then have to pull out, you know, the hammer. But it's often such a last resort. I haven't had to use the hammer in the last 4 years in Harvard. I haven't. I used it once. I suppose it set the tone and set the example, but I've never had to use it again. So generally, I just prefer to relate to people on the basis that as a person, I am self-driven, I set standards, I take pride in what I do. So when I present something, I usually say it represents me.